Harry Hughes, and I was born in Linden, Indiana, April the 29th, 1899, and at the age of 4 years old, my parents migrated to Los Angeles, California, when it was a very small town. There were about 60,000 people there at the time. I went to school at the Wadsworth School in Los Angeles on 44th Street and South Park Avenue, or Wadsworth Street, and then at the age of about 17, I quit school and went to work for the Times Mirror Printing and Binding Company for a short time. I also was a Western Union messenger boy for a period of time, and then I worked in the studios off and on from that time on till about 1924. In 1924, I took off and started for New York City. But I never got to New York. I went up to Seattle and Everett, Washington. I wound up in Everett and stayed around there for several years. I worked on all the buildings around there. And in 1925, I took a fishing trip with two boys on a Coast Guard boat, or PT boat, to Ketchikan, Alaska. And during that time, I didn't stay but one day in Ketchikan, one night. We provisioned and went back south to Seattle. I worked around Everett. I worked in the mill, and I worked as a salesman for Peterson Nethway, a radio and refrigerator and calvinators and water systems. I visited with all the farmers around in Skagit County and Snohomish County and part of King County. Then I went to all the logger dances all over the different parts of the state there, in Wickersham, Bellingham, and Stanwood, Gold Bar, Salton, Snohomish, and Everett. I also spent many hours in the roller skating rinks. I skated in almost every rink in those years, all the way from Bellingham, or Wickersham Rink, out of Bellingham, clear to San Diego. I run a rink twice as a partner and also for myself. I had a rink in Centralia for a period of time and one in Snoqualmie Falls. I used to go fishing on the Pilchuck River many weekends. And in 1929, I obtained a job as a millwright at Nushagak, Alaska, with the Booth Fisheries, Northwestern Fisheries. Also in 1930, I met a Mr. Skarstrom, winterman at the cannery at Nushagak, and a Mr. Andrews, a native fisherman. Also, there was a Russian priest, Russian Orthodox priest there at Nushagak, and there was a Russian wedding, church wedding. It lasted almost a week. The priest was a very good carpenter, and he wanted all my tools at the end of the season, because during the winter, he built sleds and made long trips to the native village to administer to the needs of the people off of the wilderness there, where they very rarely saw anyone. He covered as much as 400 miles in a single trip to administer to their needs. I landed back in Seattle in September and made a trip to California. I returned to Seattle and worked for the Tufeld Carlson Contracting Company on the Bon Maché building. I was taken out of my overalls and made an inspector on that project. I went to Everett, Washington, and I worked in the Lowell Pulp and Paper Mill for a season. Then went to work for King County in the shops at Redmond, Washington, as an electrician and a fireman, firefighter during the fire season. And I worked over 2 years for John C. Stevenson, chairman of the Board of County Commissioners, and he was a very good friend. And then I had another friend from Alaska, a Klondiker, by the name of Captain A.J. Goddard and his wife, and a number of former Yukon Alaskan friends. They tried to talk me into coming back to Alaska to stay, of the wonderful opportunities here. So I came back to Fairbanks, Alaska. I had a letter from King County to Mr. Nash of the Alaska Road Commission to go to work in his shops. I went to see Mr. Nash. He said he had nothing for me. Then I met a Mr. and Mrs. Nerland and Mr. Adler Nordale, Jalmer Nordale, Alice Nordale, Roy Blockus of the hotel. I applied for work on the Alaska Railroad and received work in the bridge and building crews, and I worked for almost 5 years on the Alaska Railroad. I acquired a cabin and prospected on Lignite Creek in the Healy Fork area, and also part of the cat and freight crew of the dredging supplies from Lignite into Caribou Creek on the Bill Taylor property, and it was leased to a Mr. Dunkel. That was about a 90-mile creek into the Kantishna. We arrived at Johnny Bechet's cabin on the route near Wonder Lake. In the night, we made camp and went to visit Johnny at his cabin. He was sure glad to have visitors and opened up the trap door into the floor to his Nature's Cold box and brought out some powerful home brew. We sat around and talked a while and had something to eat. It was getting late, and we were about to start back to the Wanigan and Cat train to sleep, but Johnny would not stand to see his guests leave so soon. We must stay the night. There were several bunks around the walls of this cabin, and Johnny opened up a closet, and there were blankets stacked almost to the ceiling of this closet. I picked up one, and it was so heavy, I found it had a half a dozen blankets quilted together just like homemade. There were several... I asked Johnny Bechet why the blankets were quilted together and why so heavy. Johnny said he did not like to make beds, but with them all quilted together, all he had to do was catch hold of one corner and shake and fold, and presto, the bed was made. We got quite a laugh out of that one. There were several old-timers in the area. One of them was Fanny Quigley and Mr. Joe Dalton and a fellow by the name of Tracy. This Tracy heard about my fancy shooting on the trail coming over and wanted my new 3220 rifle. Tracy offered me a 30-06 Model 54 Winchester. They told me had been dropped on the rocks in the sheep hills hunting and would not shoot straight as the barrel was bent. I took it out and fired two shots at a target in the stump. The two shots were right on top of each other, only about 6 inches off of the center of the target at 10 yards. I traded rifles. They had quite a fuss, thinking I was really being taken advantage of by Tracy. I took the rifle and barrel sighted it in and adjusted the sights, and it turned out to be a very good gun, as I used it for several years to get moose and caribou and sheep for meat when in need around camp. We unloaded the freight train at Bill Taylor's camp on the Caribou Creek and started back over the trail, but we were told that the ice had went out on the Clearwater and one of the rivers we would have to travel back on. It was decided to fly some of us out from Wonder Lake. Mr. Dunkel came into Wonder Lake to pick us up. By this time, the snow was very wet and soft. We all got on snowshoes and packed the runway so that we could get in the air from Wonder Lake. We finally got in the air. We had to climb to about 9,000 feet to make it through the mountains and Polychrome Pass. We circled around after leaving Wonder Lake over Red Mountain and in the Polychrome Pass area. The clouds were dropping and closing in behind us so fast as we traveled up to the pass, no chance to turn back. It looked like we could touch the snow as we were so close to it. Less than 20 feet as we cleared the last valley, we came out over this mammoth valley at Colorado Station on the Alaska Railroad. And we sure were glad to be out of that mountain. I arrived back at my cabin at Lignite with a happy relief of a wonderful 90-mile hike and had the opportunity to gas around the fire with all my neighbors about the trip. I took some pictures on the trip, which I have in my album, a few shots along the trail. It was a pretty dreary country in those days. There was only a half a dozen people or so living over in that country. There was a fellow by the name of Dewey Burnett, and there was a fellow by the name of Mr. Knight, Mr. Burroughs, an old pilgrim. He's one of the last old timers over in that area. All the rest of them are gone. And there's a Bill Julian used to be over there. He's quite old. He lives here in town now. I haven't talked to him for several years. And there's an Andrew Dragish, a trapper over there. There's quite a colorful character. He built a five-story roadhouse at Middle River to try to get the highway, the road put through into Wonder Lake from Lignite Station on the Alaska Railroad. It was a very good terrain to put a road through. It would be an all-year area, which they're building the road there today. The State Department of Roads is building a road in there, and they have it almost completed this year. But they didn't build the road in, and poor old Andrew got too old, and he caught himself a lot of fur, and he had a roadhouse at Lignite. First, he had the old Singleton place at Healy, and then he moved down to Lignite, and a lady by the name of Mrs. Bill Shannon, an early day pioneer that's very well known in the park area in those days, come down to Healy Station to run that roadhouse for Andrew Dragish, and finally she bought the place and run it, and Andrew built a new place at Lignite. He built a two-story building there. He had a big greenhouse and a blacksmith shop and two or three or four cabins, and his neighbors were John Howard and myself, and a fellow by the name of Lee Swisher. He's retired and lives in Pennsylvania. And of course, Frank Glazer, our old predator animal hunter, used to live around there and be around there. And there was a man by the name of Galen, had a transportation company in McKinley Park, and they used to keep 25 or 30 horses there at Lignite. Every summer they'd take them up in the park for people to ride because there was no roads in those days up in the park. At least they weren't in condition to get over with vehicles. Nowadays they have cars and trucks up there and they can get over the roads. But it's still nice to take a horse and ride off through the hills. So they still today do it. There's a number of horses around there. There used to be a fellow by the name of Bill Henry. And old Henry was a typical old sourdough. He lived in an old rappleshackle cabin. He made his home brew and he went out and dug a little gold. And in his spare time on sunny afternoons, you'd find him sitting down on the river panning out a little gold. And then there was a fellow by the name of John Calvin, he's a pioneer, an old timer. He used to take hunting parties. He was a guide until he went practically blind. And then there was a fellow by the name of Gene Tivis. He was a First World War veteran. And I called on him in his cabin one day. The neighbors let me know that he was sick. I went down to see him, and he was sitting up in front of the stove, feeding the stove wood. It was 40 below zero. And he was a pretty sick man. But I said, well, Gene, aren't you pretty tired and sleepy? He says, yes, but he says, I can hardly hold my eyes open. But he says, if I go to sleep, the fire will go out and I'll freeze to death. So he was in such a physical condition that I went up to the Alaska Railroad Depot to see if I could get transportation for him. So I called the assistant general manager of the Alaska Railroad, Mr. Cunningham, and talked to him, and he sent me back to get Mr. Gene Tivis's discharge serial numbers from his First World War record, and he had a ticket waiting for him when he got up to the depot. Well, Gene was broke, so I give him some money out of my pocket to pay his hotel keep at Curry. You see, the train used to stop halfway, stay overnight at Curry, and then go on into Anchorage the next day. Well, Gene only lived 5 weeks in the Anchorage hospital, and he passed away. Well, there's another old-timer around there, Pop Hollis. He's been around there quite a few years. He's used to be over in Wyoming, in Oklahoma. He's a typical old cowboy. He's a cowboy all his life. And old Pop Hollis is quite old today. He must be pretty close to 90. He's getting partially blind, or pretty nearly blind. And we had a lot of good times together. And then there was another boy that come from Pennsylvania there. Built a cabin across the river from me. Oh, he's a miner, coal miner. He was given up to die as miner's consumption. And the boy went to work and lived off the country over there, and he's still alive today, getting along as fine as he can be, and he's working for for one of the coal mines up there on the Healy River. There's only two or three people around that area today that were around there the years that I lived around there. There was another old man by the name of Diebold, run a post office at Ferry. That's 8 miles from where I was. Kind of colorful old character. He was in there in the early 1908 or 1904 and tramped all over that country as a young man. There's quite a lot of old timers to remember about him. And then there was a fellow by the name of Robbie. He died at 81 years old, and he was buried up on the hill near Ferry. And then there was another fellow by the name of Joe Kosky around there, and Barlow, fellow by the name of Barlow. They just took him outside recently. He's quite an old timer. He's getting close to 75 years old and feeble. Well, that's just a little of things that I can tell you about around the area where I live there. I set traps. I stayed 8 months out without even coming to town one time. If I needed anything, I used to leave a message in a box alongside of the railroad track, and a section foreman would come along and pick it up. Next trip, he'd drop it off if I needed anything in town, and I didn't go anyplace, only out and hit the trail every morning. I'd get up at 3, 4, 5 o'clock in the morning and be on my way, either prospecting or setting traps or covering the country. I covered the country every direction up there for around 30 miles. In every direction over there, I could tell you almost every moose, every caribou, and every sheep, and every wolf. I got so I knew their tracks. I always knew when a stranger come in the country over there, could always tell the sign. Well, I'll terminate this part of my story for right now. This is Harry Hughes, and this is September the 18th, 1961, at Fairbanks, Alaska.
This is a continuation of the Carol story.
Carol.
So Charlie came back to us at Fairbanks, as I said before, down in order. Well, he was around with us there at our home, and finally he had a stroke which affected his mind somewhat, and he used to kind of play with the kids just like another kid and what have you, but he'd do little chores around the house and help us. And as time went on, we kept Charlie for 2-3 years. Finally, Charlie passed on. And for old time's sake, to keep him from going to a pauper's grave, my wife and I, we buried him ourselves. And we still keep a little flower going on his grave there, up in Birch Hill at Fairbanks. And we often think of Charlie and some of the wonderful music that he wrote when he was alive.
Okay, thanks, Frank. We'll start moving on to our next location.
Now we're, this is Frank Young and Andy Wicken and Dolly and Harry Hughes. We're stopping down here at kind of a memorial park that the city of Anchorage is setting up, and the Alaska Railroad has contributed old 556, one of the old engines, the Alaska Railroad. And it still has the blade on the front that kicked the moose and the rabbits off the track. It's located about 4 inches above the rail, and it, when they get up on the track and hit them, it just throws them off to each side. Of course, lots of them get killed. I've seen that working on the railroad myself years ago. Frank, do you know any history on this engine at all?
No, I don't know any history on it, but it must have a history or it wouldn't be here in the park on exhibition. It might possibly be the first locomotive that ran from Anchorage to Fairbanks, or it might have been the locomotive that pulled the train of President Harding when he visited the interior of Alaska.
It could be that. It could be that that locomotive. Now, number one engine, the old one on the Alaska Railroad, is located right in front of the Alaska Railroad Depot on a monument at the present time. An old number one from the Chattanooga Railroad or the Chena Railroad is located at Fairbanks at the present time, just across the bridge on Cushman Street.
We're moving down now to the Westwood Hotel from this point, and we have met a number of people from Juneau and Ketchikan, Lester Gore, and his, Judge Lester Gore, and his son, and several here of the old-timers from Ketchikan and Juneau. And then George Vijanich and Jimmy McDonald arrived here in good condition in their Cadillacs. They're here, and we met Forbes Baker and Mrs. Baker. They arrived last night, and they went down to Kenai for a trip today. There's quite a number of them around here. There's an airplane due in the morning with quite a party from Fairbanks, and also the train is due in the morning. There'll be a number of pioneers come up on the train from Fairbanks. They'll arrive here at 8:31 in the morning. We'll say goodnight on this part of the tape until morning.
This is Thursday morning, September the 28th, 1961, at Anchorage, Alaska, at the Pioneers Convention. And we're at the Roosevelt Hotel right now, and we've been meeting some more of the people coming in. And this is the clerk. Now, you give your name on here.
I'm George Kendall.
George Kendall?
Yes, sir.
Now, how many pioneers have you got in here?
Oh, we have on to probably 16, 18 of them.
Are you going to be able to take care of any more today?
Oh, yes. We have them coming in this evening.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, hey, George, come over here. Come over here, George. George Bajonich is running. He didn't want to get his name. I want to hear his voice on this tape.
Come here, Hank. I can't talk.
George?
No.
Now, come on. When you get home, we're going to tell Mary a lot of stories. Do you
I
know?
You can tell him.
We're going to blackmail him into a story.
You can tell a lot.
What is your name, sir?
Nelson.
Louis Nelson.
Louis Nelson. And you're from where?
Cordova, Alaska.
Cordova.
Alaska.
And how long have you been in Alaska, Louis?
Oh, about 48 years.
48 years. You're a real old-timer then.
Yes.
How old are you, Louis?
Oh, I'm 74.
74?
I was 74 in April the 20th.
April the 20th. All right, thank you, Louis. Now I'm going to turn this back and let you hear.
We're at the International Airport greeting some of the Fairbanks delegation from Igloo 4 and Auxiliary 8 at the International Airport.
Mr. Ernie?
Yes, sir. We had a wonderful flight down. Expect to have a wonderful time.
Mrs. Herring?
Well, I'll get over that.
All right, now, you're president of the...
Of auxiliary number 8.
How many of your party come? Of the auxiliary, you know, have any idea?
Well, I don't know. I'm sure of 9 in the delegate list, but I'm not sure of the rest.
Mrs. Jones?
Well, we had a grand trip coming over. I'm sure glad it came.
It's cloudy and raining, but there's nothing to it but joy.
They don't blame me when I said it was sunshine all the way. So I'll play this back to them so they can hear it.
Every year we get 2 years young.
This is Louis Black.
Mm-hmm.
From Fairbanks, Igloo 4. How old are you, Louis?
What?
How old
are
you?
I'm from Nenana.
Oh, you're from Nenana.
No.
You
changed your category. I heard about that.
Yes. Yes.
So you represent Nenana.
Yes, sir.
Was anyone else in Nenana?
Yeah, Grant Pearson, but he backed out when he got to the when he got to the McKinley Park. Mm-hmm. He decided to stay. He decided he had a little other business or whatever that is.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Mr. and Mrs. Jones were
absolutely
forming the Nenana, so
yeah.
We got a little representation for the old hometown.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Where was you born, Louis?
Out of Lorraine.
Is this Lorraine? Lorraine.
Elsa.
Elsa Lorraine. What year was that?
1886.
That makes you...
75.
75. You're getting right along there, aren't you?
Yeah.
Now, Louis, would you like to hear what you said?
We got that damn thing here.
Auxiliary number 8. Are you recording this?
No.
Oh, my goodness.
What kind of trip did you have?
Oh, it was terrible. You know how I just hate going on a plane anyway, and we get out there and it wasn't even heated.
How's Harry make it?
Oh, he just goes to sleep.
He
enjoys everything.
He's 75 also.
He will be 79 in November.
79.
See,
now that's a miracle, isn't it?
Yeah.
He's having a good time.
He's out-step me any day.
That's all he can do right now is get everything out of life he can.
He certainly is.
Mm-hmm.
And we're pleased with this. I think it'll be nice here. And we're just a couple of blocks from over there from the...
Andy and I have got the room down for him, Joe.
Oh, I don't know what room we have, but as long as I'm warm, I can't stand being cold.
If it's a little rough on Harry walking, you want to go someplace, don't forget to tell me and I'll take
it. No, if it's just along here, though, he can walk better than
I
can.
Well, I don't want to let any old timer have to walk.
No, we had 23 fish last Sunday, and I caught 2 of them.
Where did you catch them?
Down there at Shaw.
Shaw Creek, huh?
Shaw Creek.
Well, that water looked good when we went by.
Oh, I'm telling you, Mr. and Mrs. Palfy went by, and they said they got there before we did and left before we did, you see, and so we didn't meet them this time.
I'm going to see your room first, huh?
You'll go see your room first.
Oh, how old are you, Harry? I just asked her. How old are you?
Oh, 79 now.
You keep it a secret?
Well, no secret now. She knows all my
records.
That's a trouble she knows all about.
I just got through telling you, and then I saw that he had this on, that you are 79.
That was a little conversation in the lobby with some of the guests arriving here for the convention. And Andy Wicken and I and quite a lot of us, we've spent the rest of the afternoon in the evening over at the Pioneer Hall. There looks to me to be between 250 and 300 people already registered in. There might be a few stragglers come in tomorrow morning. We had quite a cocktail hour. We had hors d'oeuvres and a lot of things to eat and a lot of things to drink, and some of the elderly people in the 79 and 80 year bracket were out dancing. And we finally got Ruth Barrick situated in her nephew's apartment over here in Fourth Avenue, and she's happy now. Is there anything you want to say about this tonight, Andy? We met some of our old friends.
Yeah, we had a good time over at the cocktail party there. I oiled up my joints and went out there on the floor and danced about three or four dances. And then a Swedish artist came along, and I managed to stick through that one. That used to be my long suit in the old days.
Thank you. We're through for tonight, and I guess we're going to call it a day. And this is the registration day, September 28th, 1961, at the Pioneer Grand Igloo Convention at Anchorage, Alaska. And tomorrow morning, we'll start out with the continuation of registration from 9 till 10 o'clock at the Pioneer Hall, and at 10 o'clock at the Elks Hall, we'll start on our program. See you in the morning.
It was September the 29th at Anchorage, Alaska, at the Pioneer Convention. And Anna Wicken and I got up early and went and had our coffee, and we'd been wandering around town. We're back in the lobby of the Roosevelt Hotel. Merle Thomas is getting up, and he won't be able to talk till he gets a little breakfast under his belt. There's quite a lot of pioneers have come in now. We've got quite a congregation here.
Now, this is Harry Hughes down at 335 6th in Anchorage. Some old pioneers here, and I'll let them give their name on the tape.
My name is Alice Anderson, and I'm the daughter of Pete Walden and old-time Cordovan. And my mother's here with me, Mrs. Marie Walden, Homeback.
You want to say something, Miss? All right, Johnny. Johnny Erland here visiting with these folks, and Johnny's going to tell you about what he's been doing. How's your trip, Johnny?
What?
How's your trip?
My trip?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
You just talk at it.
Yeah, that's very nice.
How'd you come down, Johnny, on the train?
What?
How'd you come down, on the train?
On the train.
Johnny, what's your birthday?
What
is your birthday? When was you born?
1881. I have my birthday on the 6th of October.
And you're a member of Igloo 4, Fairbanks.
What?
You're a member of Igloo 4.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, there goes the fire whistle.
John, it's nice having you here to visit with us. Yeah. And I hope you come again soon. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was so anxious to get come down here, you know. So,
Pete Walden, my father and mother, we arrived here from Bellingham in 1921, and our address was 6th Avenue. But we lived on the other side of the schoolhouse, the high school here, and now we're still at 335-309 6th Avenue. We've been here 40 years on
40 the years in this one location?
On the 6th Avenue, mm-hmm. Yes.
And this was out in the country when you come here?
Yes.
Out in the brush?
Well, it wasn't exactly a brush, but it wasn't...
There was not many people living right in here.
No, that's true. Mm-hmm. But my dad had lived in Cordova since 1909.
What do you think of this change in the Anchorage area?
Well, it's still bewildering, and, it seems that it's grown so fast, you know, that...
It's changed our way a lot.
Yes, it certainly has.
Whoever thought you'd have paved streets and automobiles running up and down here?
And to think of, like, out at Spinard where I used to go out swimming, that it's a regular city out there, too. It's hardly believable.
Thank you.
This is a little history of the Lakeshore Club on Lake Spinard from an old-timer. And she's giving me some background on the acquisition of the land when they cleared and some of the people that were here. She was here in 1921 or 22 when this was accomplished. And she'll tell me now how Jimmy Vail and Mrs. Vail started this club.
Well, in 22, Denton, they had just the platform on the floor. And they had a couple of logs, timbers, logs that was made out of logs. Mm-hmm. And they had a piano with a piece of tarp over it. I didn't hear anyone play it, but I know some older folks were, they were being served drinks right out in the open on the flat on their floor. And that was in 1922.
Yeah. About how many people were in there?
But
here,
across
then?
The lake on this side of the Lake Spinard was known as, well, that was the Spinard Roadhouse. And what the Idler was, they used to call it Helen's
Place.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then she changed it later to the Idlers. Mm-hmm. And
that was Helen Vale and Jimmy Vale?
Yeah, Jimmy Vale. But mm-hmm. I didn't see Jimmy Vale around there very much. Mm-hmm. Helen and a friend of hers was doing most of the cutting of timber around there when she wasn't busy.
You're telling it right now, like yeah. I heard it. Mm-hmm, just exactly.
Busy, when they had forest fires, she thought one year there, she thought that she was going to lose the place. We had a lot of forest fires there for a few years there, and the fire was up below, I would say, to a place there, a few hundred feet from the Idlehour, or Helen's place.
Mm-hmm.
Helen's roadhouse, or whatever it's called.
I walked out here at Mountain View when there was just one farmhouse in the whole area there.
But old Jack Lindsay was running the roadhouse for I don't know how many years before that, but he put a lot of that sand, Jack Lindsay did.
Mm-hmm.
He has several daughters.
But some of them are alive here.
Mrs. Scott is
still here.
Still Scott, yeah. And they have a daughter, Al.
Mm-hmm.
But she lives someplace in the state. She used to have a Fifth Avenue beauty salon for a good reason.
She's a beauty operator.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Their property is Fifth Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
Beauty salon now is, I think, is still owned by them.
You know Rose Olson. Rose Larson, it is. Lives down here. Rose Larson.
I probably do, but
They're part of the Joe Oates family.
Who?
Joe Oates, the early pioneers of Oates.
Well, I probably know them. I don't recall them right now.
They have quite a little property down here a little ways.
Yeah.
Mm.
That name sounds very familiar.
No, all the old railroaders are gone that used to be here.
Yeah.
Mr. Wynn used to work on the railroad, same as Jimmy Vale did, and his wife run a rooming house.
Yeah.
And I used to stop and visit with all them when I come in town. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't come to town without going visiting with.
That's right.
And all the old timers I used to visit with along the main street, which was 4th Avenue, are all gone.
Yes. Well, and those, like in the 20s, it seemed like it was one big family.
Everybody knew everybody. Yes. Everybody had a good time. Everybody trusted everybody.
I knew, like when we'd go to the Elks and the Pioneers, they had their doings in the fall. Why? Everybody was there, and they'd have their surprise cakes with the little nuggets in them. And a gay old time was had, and everybody was, well, like I said, it was a large family.
You wrote a nice letter to Johnny. He had me read it so I'd know where to come to with him when he came up.
Well, I met Johnny here a year ago, a friend of mine, and close.
Johnny Erland worked many years for the NC Company in the utility department and for the city on climbing the poles before he retired as a lineman. And I've been an electrician in Fairbanks for over 20 years.
Yes.
And I used to go out and help.
My first husband died in Fairbanks, mm-hmm. Ben Leach.
Ben Leach, yeah, I remember his name.
Mm-hmm. He had a brother by the name of Tom.
Mm-hmm.
That was an old timer up there. He died at the age of 83.
83.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I believe they were, I've been in Alaska since the 20s also.
Mm-hmm. You've really seen the change then.
Yeah. Fairbanks was very, very kind to me when I was there at that time. Fairbanks people were, I think they were very friendly and everyone was so kind.
Well, any of your friends that happen to be to this convention that would have occasion to hear this after it's over, would you like to send a greeting to them?
Yeah. Well, I have
you
a
want
very,
to call them by name and...
I have a very good friend in Fairbanks that I used to play with when I was a child, Mrs. Buster Anderson.
Mrs. Buster Anderson. I see
Myrtle.
Her every day.
Myrtle.
I see her every day.
And her sister... Miss Burnett, Ethel.
Ethel Burnett? I see her every day.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We were neighbors here.
And Rilla Morgan, I see her. They live across the street from me.
I beg pardon?
Rilla Morgan lives across the street from me.
Buster Anderson's wife and Rilla Morgan are very close friends, and they visit all the time. They live right across the street from my house.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't but there's a few other, quite a few other people I know in Fairbanks, but they've either left or...
Mm-hmm. This is a change town just like Anchorage.
I have a very good friend that used to live here that helped build the Schoenbeck building and also the Elks. He did a carpenter work on it, Rex Meyerberg.
Yes, Rex is still alive. I see him. He's worked with me for the last 24 years.
Yeah, he helped build them, the Elks, the Elks building, and also the...
Rex is an old
Also, Art Schoenbeck, you know, that which is known as the Harvard now, that was the Schoenbeck building, the Harvard Department, the Harvard building on 4th Avenue. Rex helped build that. That was quite, well, in 22 or 3, when they were, the Elks was first built in the Harvard Department, that was quite a building for those days.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to terminate this and play it back so you'll get to hear it.
That's the end of that conversation, and we went from there down to the Elks building to continue the convention meeting. And we had quite a session up till about 3:30, and then we adjourned until Saturday afternoon at 2 o'clock.